Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. We're expecting a highly charged show tonight with multiple callers. Don is at a ball in Reno, Nevada, and he will be calling in 15 minutes after the intro. I've also invited guests off the internet. My main comparative topic tonight is Ronald Reagan, how the Republican Party keeps pairing him as one of the greatest with Lincoln. This is not so. Ronald Reagan was a congenial, likable president, but he was also an actor who served in the military. He was not highly educated. He was a public relations person. He had certain strong convictions that perpetrated him to the highest risk level in foreign policy making. I am not trying to contour him as an evil man, but he was by no means of the stature that Abraham Lincoln was as a former president. So the Republican Party, get off your soapbox. It's not going to happen. History is going to be recorded right on this radio show, right here, right now. I lived through the Reagan administration. It was no pie in the sky. He even had personal conflict with within his own family members due to the oblivion of his wife, Nancy Reagan, who died today. She was a scrupulous person who had favoritism to some of his staff and dislike for others. But Reagan was a nice guy. That's fine. Take it at that level, but don't put him on a pedestal as one of the greatest presidents ever. Ronald Reagan's efforts to eradicate communism spanned the globe, but the insurgent Contras cause in Nicaragua was particularly dear to him. He actually feared the Cuban-backed Sandinistas, who actually rose up. They were a force to be reckoned with in the 1930s. Their leader, Sandino, was taken out by the Somoza family, who dominated Central American politics for a period of 40 years. The Contras, according to Reagan, were the moral equivalent of our founding fathers. Under the so-called Reagan Doctrine, the CIA trained and assisted them and other communist insurgencies in that time period. Now, one thing you have to remember is my personal friend, Father Larry Rosebaugh, tried to stop training of Contras in Georgia. He actually climbed over a fence and started reciting religious liturgical doctrine over a loudspeaker to try to prevent the United States government from getting involved in unnecessary affairs in Central America. Assisting in the supplying of financial support, a difficult task was achieved when the Democrats took a hold of congressional elections in November of 82. And we're also going to discuss the Boland Amendment, which prevented Reagan from taking further legitimate action in Nicaragua. First, Democrats passed the Boland Amendment, which restricted CIA and Department of Defense operations in Nicaragua specifically. In 1984, a strengthened Boland Amendment made support almost impossible. A determined, unyielding Reagan told the National Security Advisor, Robert McFarlane, "I want you to do whatever you have to do to help these people, body and soul, together." Now, one thing I want to mention, this Reagan took office. Nixon was in office from 68 to 74, then Ford was temporarily in office, and then the Carter administration, who only acted on a moral basis and failed to release the hostages for over a 300-day period in Iran. That's what Reagan was faced with when he took office. One reason he won office and the Republicans took control of the White House over the Democrats is because Jimmy Carter had one failed attempt with a Black Hawk to secure the prisoners out of Iran, but he didn't want to compromise on his gestures and risk the lives of the American hostages, which I believe was 376 days in Iran. Now, Reagan was willing to do that. He did trade arms for hostages through this Iran-Contra deal. He denied it, and he knew about it, and there's no way that he couldn't have. I'm going to have my friend on YouTube, not a personal friend, but a person on YouTube who's a historical genius named Keith Hughes, explain the next stage of the Iran-Contra affair. And by the way, one thing that we're trying to disprove is just how difficult it was to conduct a two-part taking situation in which we gave arms to Iran. Well, you'll just have to listen to what I have to say, but this is much more high risk than what anything that Hillary Clinton did during the Benghazi affair.
So that's one side of the picture, right? You're Reagan, you want to fund these guys, you want to fund the Contras, the Sandinistas are in power in Nicaragua, and then we have to kind of stop there and move on to Iran. What's going on? It's cats eating dogs. So, Iran, right? Not a lot of historical background here. Basic stuff, but the CIA had supported the revolution in the 1950s that had put in the Shah of Iran. The Shah of Iran was seen as pro-American, more of a secularist, and he ran that country all the way up to 1979, the same year that the Sandinistas took over Nicaragua. And then in 1979, there's the Islamic Revolution, and the Ayatollah Khomeini takes power, and he's very anti-American. And at the same time, and this is really important because it explains Iran-Contra, Hezbollah, which is an Iran-supported terrorist group in Lebanon, had taken 7 American hostages. So Reagan is trying to deal with a very anti-American government in Iran and at the same time find a way to get these hostages released. And there's an opportunity that's going to arise because you need to know this, that Iran is involved in the Iran-Iraq war. So I think that Reagan, and we're going to talk about it in a second, but Oliver North and some of the other players in here, what's the other guy's name? Poindexter. Is it Poindexter? His really name is Poindexter. But these guys are going to see an opportunity in fulfilling some of Iran's needs and American needs, and at the same time getting Nicaragua involved in the Contras. So now that we have some really basic ideas, right, our position in Nicaragua and our position in Iran and these hostages in Lebanon, we can advance to the Iran-Contra scandal. So, 1947, isn't it funny? Every time I talk about something, I'm like, we gotta go back in time, because history explains everything. But the 1947 National Security Act, signed by Harry Truman, created the National Security Council, which is really kind of an executive branch-ish kind of thing that is going to facilitate the president in matters of foreign policy. And that had stayed sort of independent and between legislative and executive worlds up to really the Bay of Pigs. And then after the Bay of Pigs, Kennedy sees the National Security Council and the CIA is kind of going rogue. So he brings that under executive control a little bit more. So that might have in the long run been a mistake, because now the president, in a sense, has operational command of covert action that can exist outside of checks and balances. And I think that's really where Iran-Contra begins, is understanding that this National Security Council, who is going to hire Oliver North, and that's a big guy in this position, and he becomes the political liaison or military political liaison for the National Security Council. So he's operating in a very kind of like, what is it, a government action, a government sense, or is he a spy, or is he a political agent? I'm not exactly sure what he is, but he's really the guy who is mechanically in charge of executing the president's wishes. And one of the president's wishes, and there's two, is free the hostages and get the Contras funding. And not many people talk about this, but the Contras got funding from other sources other than what we're going to talk about. Saudi Arabia had given millions of dollars to the Contras, and Oliver North is kind of existing with the Bolton Amendment. So while the Bolton Amendment, specifically forbids sending government money to the Contras, Oliver North, executing in his mind the president's wishes, is finding other ways to do that, not to have the government do it, but really to have third-party players what Iran-Contra at the end of the day means is that Oliver North has facilitated weapons sales to Iran. And that's kind of a shocker because Iran is anti-American. So here's Reagan in one sense going, we're never going to deal with terrorists. And on the other hand, he's either approving or knowing or people under him are selling weapons to Iran. Now, they're not selling them directly from America. They did a little bit later in the scandal, but early on they were going through Israel. Israel was sending them, I think it was like anti-tank artillery weapons, TOM, I think the initials were, or something like that. And then we would give the weapons to Israel that they had given to Iran, and then the excess profits and the markup on that money was being funneled to the Contras, and in a sense behind the Bolden Amendment, behind Congress's back. And really this all blows up in 1986, and we could talk forever about this. There's a lot of other details that if you're researching, you should research, but...
I'm going to pause for a minute because I have to bring up the War Powers Act. If Reagan had done this legitimately, he would have had to ask Congress for permission after 60 days to get approval to have any type of military dealings with Central America. The War Powers Act, which was started in 1941 but then officially reapproved in the 1970s, it was known as the First War Powers Act, was an American emergency law that increased federal power during World War II. But basically, it was an act that was also signed again for the Second War Powers Act in March of 1942 that it made it impossible for the United States to stay in a country past 60 days after an emergency war situation had been created. You could not stay in a country over 60 days without congressional approval for the purse strings. So that's another thing Reagan violated. He overstepped the National Security Act and the National Security Council, which was established by Truman in 1947. And he also used Oliver North as kind of like a puppet government employee to achieve his desired goals without the consent of Congress. Now, John F. Kennedy, way back in the 60s, was aware of the limited effects of Truman's act, but Reagan had so much passion for this area, he didn't care. But that's still not a way to go about trying to solve foreign policy matters. Your passion has to balance out the law, international law, the United Nations, such as in 1991 when we went to war against Iraq over the Kuwait matter. George Bush still sought a resolution in that matter. You can't deal with the Middle East on a pro bono basis. With that, I'm going to let this Keith Hughes from YouTube finish out the statement, and I'm going to mention a few other things before John or Don joins us.
Just the basic plot is, in 1986, and by the way, Iran released some of the hostages. Not they did, but Hezbollah did. And that was seen as Reagan as a win, that he had facilitated the releasing of these hostages. And on the same hand, he was arguing that this arms was going not against the United States, was going into the Iran-Iraq war, and having those guys fight, in a sense, helps us because they're keeping their eye off us and they're just kind of wasting their energy on each other. And also there were some moderate forces in Iran that I think North and some of the Reagan officials believe could be worked with, and this was a good idea to have some type of open dialogue with Iran. I'm going in the weeds! So let's now look at what transpires into Iran-Contra in the media. So the story is broken. It's like November 3rd. It's 1986. Congressional elections are coming up. And this is kind of like the big news before the elections. I think it was a press agency in Lebanon and yada, yada, yada. It had finally gotten the story out because I think the Sandinistas had shot down one of these planes that was carrying, the supplies to the Contras, and it really finally finally blows up into a congressional investigation. And that becomes big news. And Reagan had denied any culpability, that he didn't know anything. And then later it was found out when I think it was Caspar Weinberger, or one of the guys was interviewing or talking to Reagan when Reagan was in the hospital, and he had said on the his testimony that Reagan had at least known that the Iranians were getting arms from Israel that we approved, because Israel wouldn't do it without our knowledge. I'm going in the weeds. But at the end of the day, it's really the testimony of Oliver North that captures the American audience attention, and it really becomes kind of Congress versus the president, executive branch, in executing foreign policy. And at the end of the day, there was something called the Tower Commission that Reagan had appointed, and Congress ran its own commission. It was independent counsel, and they all basically came to the conclusion that these guys broke the law, that maybe Reagan knew, maybe he didn't, but at least he had mismanaged the situation. But all of these guys, not all of them, but most of them, were convicted and indicted and convicted of breaking the law and lying to Congress. Bush, who was vice president, then became president, and he pardoned the guys who hadn't got their cases reversed on appeal. So that's Iran-Contra. How crazy is that?
I see John on the line, so I'm going to pull him in. He might be on limited time. Good evening, John. Thanks for joining us.
Well, hello, Conrad Hoffenstein.
I pulled a coup before you even started the show. My premise of the show tonight is Hillary Clinton had 23 emails for Benghazi in which 4 people died, and Reagan, who has been constantly praised by the Republican Party all election season, some people even put him in the category of Abraham Lincoln, was really a nice guy who was a good actor, but he doesn't belong in the company of Abraham Lincoln. However, since you're a Reaganite, maybe you could feel free to weigh in on that subject.
Well, thanks for the opportunity, Jane. Actually, I think the big issue here is the fact that Reagan was very anti-communist, and you, being a former member of the party, would naturally have a disdain for someone who's so dedicated to taking down the forces of evil. I'll put it this way. In every presidential reign, you will find there's always some conspiracy, some little bad thing we did. You know, we whacked some dictator that, you know, and we did it the dirty way. It's kind of like this. You're at home with your family, and some guy sneaks in the back door, and he's, you know, raiding through stuff. Your dad pulls out the shotgun, says, you know, get the heck out of here. The guy, you know, pulls a gun. Dad shoots him, and you go, oh, you know, he violated protocol. You know, he didn't properly address the person, and we get sued because some asshole was messing with, you know, with our life. So it's kind of like that. You get involved with all these foreign affairs, and you'll find all kinds of, it's just a bunch of wicked, evil people out there, and you have to be a little twisted to deal with it. Sometimes it works out, and sometimes it doesn't, but, you know, I think the big picture, Reagan made people proud to be Americans, proud to, you know, not to be whimpering and in a little corner, and he stood up against the big powers, you know, against, you know, the Soviets and against China and other people. Did he do it right? You know, no, there were flaws, but the point is, compared to what we had before him, it was way better, in my opinion, my limited scope.
It's funny, I do have a clip. I recorded one of my friends tonight on, because he couldn't join the show, I recorded a clip that he said about Reagan and the Berlin Wall, which I'll play in a minute. But overall, I just want to tell you what my bone of contention is and then my through line is. I don't mind people looking back 30 years and saying Reagan was a great president, because George W. Bush Jr. had controversy. George Bush Sr. had some controversy, but overall was, you know, pretty competent. They don't have a modern day Republican hero. Now they could probably handpick a few. They could probably handpick a few senators, you know, from the Republican Party over the last 35 years and turn those people into heroes. It doesn't always have to be a president, but I the only thing that bugs me about Reagan, and this kind of mirrors a paper I did about 10 years ago, that I know that he had to know that Oliver North was up to this. You can't be sitting in the Oval Office with Oliver North under your thumb and not knowing that he's trading arms for hostages. I mean, these are big-time deals. You know, there's big tanks and guns and probably air stuff going to Iran, and then Iran's turning around and selling it to Israel. And then you missed a certain part. Iran also was funding the Hezbollah in Lebanon, who took 7 Americans for hostages in the mid-'80s. So this was a 4-country ring involved. And it just seemed kind of rather impossible that Reagan didn't know anything about it.
Oh, no, he was probably mastermind. And one of my favorite Saturday Night Live sketches back in the day when I actually watched the show was they would have Reagan, and he was hanging out with, what's his name? He did It's a Wonderful Life.
Jimmy Stewart.
And, you know, he's like, Dutch, what's going on with all this stuff? You know, and, you know, he's like, oh, everything's just fine. And he's talking to Girl Scouts, and, you know, all these little people are visiting the Oval Office. And then he says, oh, you know, I've got a call. You've got to leave. And so he escorts him out, and then the door closes like he's speaking Chinese, and he's talking about, you know, okay, you know, here's what we do. You know, you're going to take the missiles. You're going to aim them at the Soviets. You know, he's doing all this crazy, you know, secret agent stuff. And then after he finishes the call, he's back to, well, you know, hello, welcome to the Oval Office here. Let me, you know, show you the White House. And, you know, I think the presidents, they have to act like that, you know, Obama.
Well, I think you're right about one thing. Reagan was convicted. I read several articles today. He had such a strong conviction to overpower the Sandinistas that he had to act. Now, he felt like it was a moral duty, and he wouldn't take no for an answer. Don's on the line, but I'm going to play my friend Steve's clip and his opinion about Ronald Reagan. Here we go. Continue to play it because there was a TV in the background, but basically he said that at the time that the Berlin Wall went down, which was controlled by the Russians because they controlled East Germany, that we paid off the Russians with subsidies because half their people were starving, and that it was an inside deal. I don't know if I agree with all that, but anyways, let's bring Don in. John can comment too after Don comes in. Hi, Don. We're talking about how Ronald Reagan wasn't the picture-perfect Republican.
Oh, that's a wonderful subject because Ronald Reagan was, not even, I don't know, he was not even conservative. And remember, half of it, I mean, he wasn't not conservative. He was conservative, but he was neoconservative. A lot of things that he did were just to trip up minorities and cut taxes and all that stuff. Yeah, and everybody has to remember Nancy Reagan. Nancy Reagan ran the United States for 3.5 years. Ronald Reagan was a demented titular head, and that was it. He wasn't even there. Nancy Reagan ran the show.
Okay, before you get too critical, Ronald Reagan is one of John's heroes. So you can say what you want to say, but the fact of the matter is he was a likable person. And I'm a liberal, by the way, but
he was
a likable person. He was a good negotiator. He wasn't a hater, but he did make some grave mistakes.
He was Donald Trump light. Get over it.
No, he was a good actor.
John. Hi, John. How are you?
Excellent, Don. I love it, actually. Go for it.
He was Donald Trump light. That's what Ronald Reagan was. He wasn't even a president.
Ronald Trump.
He was a demented goofball at the end of his term, second term. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put it so lightly. I have other words I can ascribe to Ronald Reagan. I have no problem.
I'm just, Don, my question is why is the Republican Party now, after all these years, comparing Ronald Reagan to Abraham Lincoln and putting him on a pedestal? Really?
Well, they're trying to bring in the minority vote. That's obvious. It's a blatant pandering to the African-American vote. That's the easy question you're going to ask me.
I knew the race card would come in there sometime.
Well, what are you talking about? You're talking about Lincoln. Lincoln didn't do a jacking thing. He was dead before his term was up. He didn't do a jacking thing to sign, emancipation. He didn't. He was actually a slave owner. Come on, give me a break. You know?
Abraham Lincoln was not a slave owner.
Okay. He supported.
You're mixing him up with Thomas Jefferson, who porked Sally Hemings.
All of them were slave owners, honey. The thing about Lincoln is that he would go Trump light. He would go to wherever the temperament of society was. That's where he went. He didn't have his own agenda. He didn't have a burning desire. That fool went wherever the votes were going to take him. He knew that he was going to be up for a re-election soon, and he knew he was going to be up for re-election soon, and his ass just bailed. He said, okay, I'm going to go.
My
looks
friend
like Union
Steve,
might kick some ass.
I'm
going to
let John go next, but my friend Steve said the same thing, that Reagan did a lot of party favors. He followed suit for the Republican Party agenda, but who was the one who started Say No to Drugs? Was that Nancy Reagan?
Just Say No. That was the stupidest shit I ever saw in my life. That killed more black people than the Clintons did when they incarcerated all the blacks, all the black men. The only thing worse was Just Say No, because everybody knew that a black man can't just say no. If a black man has drugs or alcohol or women in front of him, some gambling or whatever the case may be, he ain't saying no. Are you crazy? Nancy Reagan knew that shit. And she was,
maybe John
like,
and I have been out of the loop all these years saying no to drugs, sex, and alcohol.
You have. What are you talking about? You guys have been completely out of the loop. But, there's nothing wrong with that. Blacks are out of the loop, and that's a godsend. Because now we can start developing our own. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you guys later. All right, we can start. Blacks can start developing their own businesses, their own ideas, their own schools. You know, we're lucky we're behind right now. We're lucky we're.
Well, maybe they should start their own water supply in Michigan. Now, let John say something in defense of Ronnie Reagan.
Ronnie Reagan, fuck Ronnie Reagan. Man, you go.
Yeah, all right, John, you just came out of a party. But John and I were having a nice conversation.
I don't know why I have so much energy. Well, I mean, when you can have a president and the dude was a demented dunce for half of his presidency, how can you say he had a successful presidency? That's the stupidest shit since Donald Trump for president.
I didn't say it, but I
no,
I
no,
do.
No. Nobody said it. I just said it.
Just on a happy note, I did read an article once. I did read an article once that Ronald Reagan was willing to negotiate with anybody. He wasn't a tough egg. He didn't put his foot down. He would negotiate with Congress on every level. Now, on that sense, it's good. He wasn't, you know, he had a mind frame that he wanted to work with people. So let's just give him that. Now, I'm not overtly criticizing him. My main premise for the show is the Iran-Contra deal was a lot more serious, high stakes than anything ever happening in Benghazi or anything else the Obama administration ever did.
What was that? What did you say?
You know Benghazi, how Hillary's getting shit about all these emails? All she did is accidentally hide a bunch of emails.
All right, we'll see you guys later. Okay. Bye bye, son, sir. Right.
John, I muted Don for a second. All Reagan's team sold arms, sneaked under Congress's nose and sold arms, and got the hostages released. So, John,
right.
Why don't you weigh in on that while I have Don muted for a second?
And that's where a person like me goes. Yes, I want someone that will make it happen. Yes, if you do it the right way with protocol, you're going to wait 20 years. The hostages will be dead. It's like Batman. Just he's Bruce Wayne during the day. He's like, you know, shaking hands and being social. And then at night, he puts on his outfit. He goes and he beats the crap out of bad people. And that's what you kind of have to do. Now, what I love about Don is everything he says is true. And yet everything he says is a lie. It's kind of like Scarface when he kicked out of the restaurant. And he says, even when I tell a lie, I'm telling the truth. It's like,
I think Don doesn't lie, but Don, you're going to come back off of mute now. Don doesn't lie, but he exaggerates. Fair. Everybody knows Reagan was kind of spacey. But I don't think he had full-blown Alzheimer's the last 4 years. I just think that he didn't have a full grip on the nation's pulse. Don,
well,
back on the line.
So he's a great president. Oh, God.
Nobody said he was a great president.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know I was off mute. Sorry.
I'm going to take your...
I'm a Reagan. Go. He can go to hell. Nice meeting you, Greg. I might give you a call just to see what's going on. Because
he's at a ball, yeah. John, and he's talking to his cronies.
Right. And what's your point?
Okay, Don Gallimore,
yes.
You're going to be nice tonight or
I'll get my
Donald Trump whip out and see how big your hands are. Okay?
There you go.
So anyways.
And I can do I have never had a problem. I have never had a problem.
John, did you hear that joke this week about there was a joke during the Republican debate conferring the size of their hands to the size of their wang-wang?
Oh, yeah,
right.
Donald Trump, the size of his hands.
And he says he's never had a problem. I've never had a problem. That's what he says. I've never
give
had a problem. I've never had a problem.
Well, looking
that's
at the women he's got, I don't think he is having a problem with the women he's got around him.
No, he's got the best women money can buy.
Yes.
What are we talking about? What are we talking about? We're talking about Russian mail order brides. Thank you.
Yes.
What's
Russian
wrong with this country?
Mail, more than one. And Jane,
what's
you
wrong
can't
with
say shit.
Don and John, you guys got to answer this next question. So the Benghazi attack happened. It was not, we didn't catch it. They burned down our embassy. Four people died. That's it. Four. In a hostile Middle Eastern country in which a country fell in 2011. So what's the big deal? Why do they keep dragging out this Hillary scandal?
Hillary scandal?
Yeah.
That's the reason.
So what if she hid 23 emails or sent them to the wrong server? Big effing deal.
It wasn't the wrong server. It was their right server. It's just that the government said it was the wrong server. You got to understand, the public, and I thought we went over this before, the doggone government servers are supposed to be encrypted where they are not hackable. These government servers are hackable. The politicians knowing, who was using it? Condoleezza. Who was the other? Colin Powell. These guys were all using unauthorized private servers. They all used it because they knew the government sucks. The government is unreliable and cannot retain privacy. So, you know, they know that. So they're on a private server, their own private server, so that they can circumvent the federal government's mandatory use of their server. This has been done before Hillary Clinton. They don't have a problem. Benghazi, the Clintons and Obama had asked those Anderson and his entourage, only a couple other people there with him, if he needed help. Good night. We'll talk to you later. Right. Thank you. You bet. They had the, you know, Benghazi was an miscalculation because Anderson didn't think he was going to get killed. He knew he was in trouble and declined about 2 weeks before, declined help from the Obamas, from the State Department. We're talking about things that could have been helped, and there might be reasons for the deaths of these people. People die. There's collateral damage. People's lives don't matter. It's the end result. And so that's why blacks, you know, and that's why minorities have been used to such a point, because they built America. You know, all the ideas, most all of the ideas that were claimed to be invented by the Edisons and the Franklins and all these people, they were just black inventions that got stolen. And the work on the, you know, the railroads, Chinese, you got blacks in the fields, you got Hispanics in the fields and in the houses and hospitality. You got the people in their place. And that's where people want it. So Benghazi.
Okay,
was just
let's let John say something.
It's just a ruse.
Okay, John's okay. Not. I agree with everything you said. I just looked up that Clinton wrote 104 emails that she sent on her private server while Secretary of State that the government has since said contained classified information. I still think it was an average mistake. John, do you find this? Well, it was. It would be like if I went on
my
Facebook at work. Big fucking deal. Like, John, do you find this issue to be relevant? And if so, if not, what do you find relevant in this election?
No, I don't think it's that relevant to me because, you know, it's like we all send our little emails. We hand notes to people. We do things on the fly. We're in a hurry. We're just winging it. You know, we all get into crazy mode. It's not like she ordered like 50 million people to get killed or something like that, or she built a nuclear weapon and dropped it on someone, you know, major, something major. It's like these things are just going to happen. There's like 110,000 situations like this, and some of them are going to go bad. You know, if you have 100 bad situations, 100 dangerous situations, and you get, you know, 10% of them go bad, you're going to have some, you know, 10 little conspiracy things that you got to hide and cover up. So this happens all the time. I don't think that's a big deal. But I think what you...
John was right. The analysis showed that using non-secure email systems to send sensitive information is widespread in that department and elsewhere.
Oh, yeah, they all do. But you know, here's something to consider. I have a young person that's disillusioned with America, and they hate when people say the good old days. They say, and she starts talking about slavery, starts talking about, you know, Vietnam and this and that. And kind of what I say, you know, what makes America great isn't the fact that we have problems. It's the fact we have the freedom to voice our displeasure. And do we have slavery now? You know, not really. You know, are we in Vietnam? No. People protested. Are we in Iraq? You know, we voice our displeasure. We have that freedom, unlike other countries. And things get corrected. It doesn't happen overnight. It's a process. So I think that does make America great. The question is, what are the alternatives to Reagan? You know, what's the alternative to, other people? Historically, do we have something better? And who are they?
Well, I'll let Don go next, but I'll use this leading question. The alternative is if Donald Trump's going to break out from the Republicans or Sanders. Let's just say either one of them, probably not Sanders, but they need to get state ballot access in more than states that exist. The Libertarian Party only has 34 state ballot accesses. The Green Party has 21, and the Constitution Party. Don, are you with us or not?
All right, hold on. Am I with you? I don't know if I'm with you or not. Hello?
Well, get on the goddamn phone and get rid of the other people.
Hello? Hold on. I do not, but I would love to.
I'm putting his ass on mute again. John, I had to do a speech for the Toastmasters, and I found out that ballot access, you have to get approval, and the Libertarian Party has 34 states that carry the ballot access. Now, Donald Trump is threatening to break off from the party. So do you think he has a chance of winning?
I think it would really be very divisive. I don't think strategically be a good move. But I think he really doesn't care. Like, in other words, all he wants is publicity and money. And influence, like even if he doesn't win, he can shake everything up and make people switch sides and make deals. So I think that's his main objective. If he happens to continue on and be president, you know, more power for him. But I don't think that's his major thing. I think he's just going to push his agenda of being controversial and you know, yelling at everyone his way. And I think that pride, I don't think he can back down from that.
I that was a really good answer, and you're right. He probably does want power and influence, but mainly he wants attention. And I can't pinpoint one issue that he can really gain something from by running for president of the United States. If he really wanted to maintain his popularity, he should have stayed out of the race, because now all his financial records are going to be exposed and everything else.
And George,
it might actually be beneficial for him to run, but then not succeed, because then he's gotten the publicity and he's gotten all the, you know, he's making people panic and he's getting the attention he wants. But to be president all the time, he's not going to be able to run all his businesses the way he wants. You know, he's going to have to hand things off to other people. So he may not want to win. You know, he may want to just go as far as he
can. That's a good point, too.
Up.
Like, he'll probably have Ivanka do some of it. His daughter from Ivana.
Right.
I'm going to just try Don one more time and see what's going on with him. I think, Don, you dropped the line and now you call back in. Are you with us or not?
Hello?
Can you hear us? Don?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes? I'm gonna hang him up, John. I'm gonna text him and tell him to call back in, okay?
Oh, okay.
Well, I guess my main premise tonight is I want to be different than the mainstream networks that are running things. Tonight they had a special on CNN about all the backroom deals from all the presidencies from 1960 on. And I guess Nixon made one more mistake in his presidency. Anyway, he made a couple mistakes. Don just called back in, so I guess I better bring him in. Don, we could hear you. Can you hear us?
Yeah. You guys couldn't hear me over. I was still on the line, but you can.
I heard you the whole time, but you didn't hear us. So
okay.
I'm talking to John about how the CNN had a special tonight on all the backroom deals made from the 1960 presidency on, and how Nixon screwed up more than once. He used to be friends with Martin Luther King, and how he had a chance to get him out of jail once, but his advisors told him not to. So the Kennedy family got Martin Luther King out of jail that night. And that made Nixon look bad, and they were talking about all different kinds of things that went wrong in the Kennedy-Nixon race for presidency.
Okay. Because the Kennedy-Nixon race for presidency was simply that Nixon was too young. He was too immature. Both of them were, and they just, you know, that's why Kennedy won by the smallest of margins. Because the public
well, according to the show, Kennedy
was,
won because the Illinois political machine added about 200,000 dead voters from Illinois that weren't even on the rolls. And the second reason Kennedy won, it wasn't because of inexperience, because Nixon had already served 8 years of vice president under Eisenhower.
That was under Eisenhower. He was the biggest warmonger we've had. Forever.
Well, Eisenhower came out of the military brass.
I don't care. He was still sending us to Korea and shit. We didn't need to go there. We didn't need to go anywhere after World War One. World War Two. We were just building our country and helping rebuild and repatriate other countries. Next thing you know, we're into another war. Fucking not even 8 years later. We weren't even recovered from the last one. That doesn't
make
sense.
Well, look at
what
it's cost today. Now we have to deal with Kim Jong-un.
Right.
John,
well, you don't have to deal with him. Forget that boy. That boy is isolated in the middle of the 5,000 miles away from the North Pole. He's a non-sequitur.
He's also 30 miles from the South Korean border, in which we have strong relations with, and they're one of the strongest capitalistic countries on Earth.
And we have strong military presence. We've got the South Korean border does not just have South Korea there. We've got bases in Japan, Guam. We can send fighters over there to North Korea in less than 10 minutes, wipe out half the country, and get back and go to breakfast.
Did
so,
you know Japan recently ordered in their legislature they can't build a military except for self-defense. That was part of the World War II pact. Now they want to eliminate that ban so that they can have a standing army to fight North Korea.
Japan does?
Yes. They're trying to work through their legislature and absolve the international law, which prevented them from not being able to create a military order that would create an offense, not a defense.
Good move. I didn't know that.
John, since you're a cherished guest, I would like you to be a little more involved. Don, did you have a sip of bubbly tonight? Because you seem a little disjointed.
No. This is the ultimate in
the
ecstasy.
So this is how you act sober?
Fuck yeah. You know, honey, if I was not, I wouldn't be as bubbly as I am. I'd be so mellow, I'd say, yes, Reagan was our greatest president, and we need more Eisenhower so we can build up our military and make the one percenters who own the guns and make the guns just very happy, and Halliburton will be our king, and we will live in happiness in perpetuity. Of course,
okay,
we
have 15 more minutes of the show, and I have a good leading question. What is the one thing a Democrat or Republican newly elected president in America could do to fuck up all the world balance? John, you go first.
Wow. Well, probably, in my opinion, it'd just be being more socialistic and being mellow and passive and play everything by the book. I think we have to have tough people in there. It's a dirty job. I wouldn't want to have to do the job because I'm not a violent person. But, I mean, to tell you the truth, the methods that I use are great for to make people feel comfortable, but they're lousy for success. You've got to be, you know, in this world, tough and mean and cold and cruel and clown people and deceive them. And that's how it works. I work for people like that. You know,
hey,
they treat me like crap, and they're successful. That's how they got there. So, I can't advise people to be, you know, very nice and Christian, you know, and meek, because you're gonna get run over when you're talking about power positions.
By the way, John and Don, Bernie Sanders attacked Clinton tonight like I've never seen. He went after her. I got pissed off, actually. I didn't like his tone, and I didn't like him badgering her.
See, he's stepping up, just like I'm saying. You got to start name calling, because the other person's going to do it to you, and if you're second, you're going to look bad. So you have to punch first in the fight to survive. So he's getting closer to trying to win. He has to kind of alter his strategy. You know, we may not like the Bernie that we get if he wins.
I like Bernie, but I hate to be a stereotyper, but he's a shrewd Jew. Oh, I do have some trivia for you guys. The very last question of the night, they asked Bernie Sanders his significance of God in his life, and they asked Clinton how she prays and who she prays for. Neither one answered their question with the word God or Jesus. She said she prayed for people who were disappointed, had trials, had burdens, and were suffering, and that she also prayed for the will of God to take place in America. And the only way he directly answered the question about God and Judaism is that he said that at first he was very vague. He said he wants to care for the suffering children like those in Flint, Michigan, but then he said that his mom used to take him to the store in Brooklyn, and he would see people's arms stamped with numbers, and that Judaism has a permanent mark on his life because his father's family was wiped out by Hitler, and he would see the Nazi hand stamp on Jewish shopkeepers who were part of the Holocaust. So towards the end of his answer, he became more powerful, but both of them were too hesitant to say if they were Christian or Jews. They just didn't want to go there in the conversation.
Have you heard of the Mason, the Masonic?
Of course we have.
Masonic. Okay. They pray to Lucifer. There is, and then the Clintons, and I believe the Sanders family, and you're right about the Jewish part. They're Jewish, and so they have some major facts. They have some major, hello, lady.
Bernie
major,
Sanders is a Jew. There's no question
about
it.
So if he goes up against Wall Street, like he's saying that he's going to do, then he is going to, yes, sir, if he's going to do that, he's going to have to, if he's going to, he's going to have to go against his brothers and sisters and uncles who are in the New York banks. So he's going to be have to go against that. There's some major issues that he's going to be encountering. So, in terms of his dedication to his people. And so you've got to keep that in mind. But anyway, back to the Masons, you got to understand they believe in the devil. And all these people are Masons. The Clintons, the Obamas.
Well, the Clintons aren't Masons. They're Methodists.
And you're not going to hear them talk about God or Christ. It's just not in their vocabulary
John,
or their lifestyle.
This is worse than your conspiracy black theories. Bill Clinton and Hillary might be rich and powerful, but they believe in Jesus. Take it back.
Whatever. Okay, you can take it back. They're part of the Mason. Just ask them. Just ask anybody if they're part of the
Mason. Oh, yeah, I'm going to walk up to Bill.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold for a second. One moment.
Good. John, he's going on mute this time for good. I just thought, as you as a fellow Christian, John, just if they asked you, how do you pray and who do you pray for? I'm pretty sure somewhere in that answer you would have said, Jesus Christ is my intercessor, or I pray to, the Christian God, or Jesus or God or the Holy Spirit. Somewhere in there you would have put a label, right?
Oh, yeah. I would definitely state, we're Americans, and we have the freedom to pursue our faith. And I believe in my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I believe he saved my soul. And that's who I pray to. Now, in America, we all have the freedom to find our own personal salvation, our own direction, or to not believe. And that is the great power of being an American. But, of course, everyone has to be politically correct. It is very interesting that, like
yeah,
I said,
I noticed they carefully chose their world. Like Sanders mentioned, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, and Buddhism. That was
right.
He said all four religions before he answered the question.
They've been well coached because they know that they're going to be asked these questions to try and pigeonhole them into a corner. And get knocked down for whatever their religious beliefs are. But I think what you'll find is that half of like what Don is saying, it's like I said earlier, everything he says is true and everything he says is a lie. It's like all these people are Masons. And they may be Methodists, they may be Lutheran, they may be this or that. That's kind of what they say publicly, but I'm just saying that they all seem to be part of these clubs and groups in these inner circles, and it makes you wonder. I'm not saying I know because I'm not in those groups, but why are they Masons? Why is all
this stuff?
Well, Nancy
Reagan consulted the horoscope people in office. I'm just going to remind Don, you were on mute for a minute. I'm going to let you back in. I just don't like the conspiracy theory overall. I still think Hillary Clinton is a public servant who wants the best for our children. Hi, Don. You're back on the air. Don? Oh, God. Anyways, I'm ending the show in 5 minutes because it's been going on an hour. But I don't know what happened to him, and I'm not going to keep testing the volume for him. Basically, I love John, this is what happened tonight. It was like 9:53, and they only had 6 minutes to go plus a commercial. And then at the last minute, they brought this lady in from Flint, Michigan, who was a school administrator, and she asked the two questions about God. So I think she actually did throw Bernie and Hillary off because they were already done with the Q&As from the audience. And then right after that, they each had 1 minute to do their conclusion. So I think both Bernie and Hillary were thrown off, and they were both a little clumsy in their answers. So I'm sure they have had rehearsed those answers in the past, but in this case, I think they both failed the litmus test.
Well, partly because they're coached to give certain specific answers and responses, and it's coached, so it's not necessarily what they truly believe. It's kind of like if they coach me through, like, say I killed someone. You go, okay, now you're pleading innocent, so this is what you say. And you have your whole script, and then someone introduces a scenario that you haven't memorized. You don't know the right answer because you may throw an answer that contradicts your earlier statements. So that's kind of what happened. If someone threw, you know, some marbles on the dance floor and they had to do some different moves, they weren't coached to respond to that particular question, or maybe mentally their guard was down. Because if they told just what they really thought, it could wipe out all their other statements, and it's going to be posted all over YouTube and Twitter that, you know, they're lying.
Just, I guess the thing to me is that I think Bernie Sanders answered the question without answering it. His early childhood, from like age 1 to 7, the first impression he had of his religion, Judaism, is, well, he even said this in his answer, is that I've seen what extreme world leaders can do. So his first impression of his own religion is that he belonged to a religion that could be wiped out, that people could die
right
for. So maybe that's why his whole life he's just trying to, you know, fight good causes and things that everybody believes in, like, you know, whether it be clean water or kids get a good education. So the second reason I think that he doesn't want to bring attention to Judaism is because we're living, the first world country of America is fighting a bloody battle right now with Muslims. And the Jews are hated more than the Christians, even though we're all people of the book. So that's why I think the second reason why he doesn't want his religion brought up constantly. Hillary, I've heard her talk many times about her religion, and she had a lot of arguments with Obama when that Jeremiah Wright controversy was going on. And she talked a lot about how her pastor and her church would never, you know, bring up hate speech and stuff like that. So I already know Hillary Clinton's background, but I still think I can see why conservative and mainstream Christians would feel cold feet about Hillary and Bernie, because they're not like Ted Cruz, who wears his religion on his sleeve and attended a Southern Baptist high school, and Christianity is his central theme in life. So, Don, are you on the line, by the way? I'm going to close Don off the show because he's not responding. But since you're on a limited time, as you and I have had many discussions over the course of the last 2 weeks, I'm going to let you start with your conclusion.
My conclusion is that America is a great country, and people will find lots of flaws. It's a flawed country. And what makes it great is that the fact that we can talk about our flaws and we can deal with our flaws. There's just, you're not going to have a perfect society because we're not perfect people. So when you get disillusioned with the imperfection, when you focus on that imperfection, you know, you're going to have a miserable life. And that's kind of the choice. Do you want to be a miserable person, or do you want to make it better? Bob Dylan had a great song. He says, when you're going to wake up and strengthen the things that remain. Everyone can complain and argue when we're rowing the boat, but stop rocking the boat. It's okay. Some people have that gift, but it's like, get busy rowing the boat and making things better. And you'll find out that, you know, there is the good. There's, the glass is half full. It's half empty too. But do you want to spend your whole time being disillusioned with the half empty? I mean, it's good to deal with imperfections and to correct them. But when that's your only purpose and you're seeking perfection above all things, I think you're going to find yourself very disillusioned, because it can never be perfect. You're going to put all your energy into that 2% or that 5% or that 20% that isn't right, and you're going to miss that beautiful day, that wonderful freedom that you have to live a beautiful life. So that's kind of my conclusion, is choose the part of the glass that's half full.
I will end with one of your songs, but I want to let you know that how I know I have a beautiful life is when I turn off all the news channels and even Netflix and just can enjoy my life on a day-to-day basis. My life goes beyond what happens in politics. If you look back over the last 40 years, every administration had a crisis to deal with, whether it was their own or whether it was created by an outside force that they had to deal with. Reagan created the Iran-Contra crisis by getting overly involved and too eager to fix it. Now, I'm not saying he's 100% guilty. He just followed his own passion. But Nixon brought down his own demise just by the fact that he was paranoid about the Democratic Party when he was 20 percentage points ahead in 72. So he was 20 points ahead in the polls, but yet he still felt compelled to break in a Democratic National office to find out more information about enemies that didn't exist. Now we are confronted with worldwide stress, international tensions that we haven't seen in our lifetime, and Jesus' second coming will happen most likely in our lifetimes. But even if it doesn't, we need a strong president and strong leadership in general to contend with these types of difficulties. In a sense, Ted Cruz is the most prepared because he's the strongest Christian on either party. But there's other people like Hillary who have had enough government experience to last through a lifetime. All I pray is that every day in America, except for if you live in Flint, Michigan, I have clean water, I have food, I have warm water to shower with. I can even drive my car in 30 below weather. It ran all winter long. I have the blessings of God because God has protected America. With that, let's just end the show by saying we'll continue in our desire to educate the American people and to enlighten them with our radio show. And hopefully I'm going to be having a few guests on in the next month. And let's just try to sustain whatever it is that we do. In Jesus' name, if you're going to pray to Jesus, at least say his name, Hillary Clinton. And Bernie, claim your roots. I'm going to play one of John's songs now. Here we go. It's going to start. John?
Oh, yeah.
John.
Oh, yes.
You want to hear the parody of human nature? The reason I've been playing Tragedy so much is because it's uploaded, but I'll try to change the order of songs for next week so I can play some of your other songs. The parody of human nature is Don was bragging to me on his text, just talking to one of the richest black men on the web, Everett Taylor of Rooftop. So even people who think that they're sincere about America have to brag about when they talk to rich people.
I love Don. I love his energy. And again, you know, everyone's right, everyone's wrong. It just depends your angle and what your value system is. If being a Muslim is the actual absolute truth, then guess what? We're in Babylon. We're evil. We're wrong. We're bad. If Jesus is Lord and Christian, all these ISIS people, all these people worshiping Muhammad and doing all this other stuff, they're going to hell. If everyone's a Buddhist, all this other stuff is just a waste of time. Everyone should be at peace and just be mellow. And maybe you'll go into some bliss or some non-existence. Or maybe you'll reincarnate if you're Hindu. So, and these are all faith issues. And once you establish what your faith is, that determines your whole slant. He's coming from a point of being a minority that was enslaved and abused and not having rights for many years. And even now, still there's prejudice. So does that taint his view? Sure. And it should. And it's okay. It's good. That's where he came from. But it doesn't mean that's the perspective that everyone else has, too. So it's all part of
I wasn't knocking John, because actually I looked up this guy on the internet, and he's an internet marketer guy, and he helps build companies. So, you know, maybe if we had somebody like him on the show, it would be a help, not a hindrance. Now, the fact of the matter is though, everybody has a tendency to name drop. That's all I was trying to say. You know?
Oh, and it's actually good. Product brand name recognition is essential to survival in today's new reality.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, I just wanted to say one thing I forgot to mention, and then we can end the show. There was this poor black woman. I'm not trying to stereotype, but there was a down-and-out black woman in Flint, Michigan, because that's where the debate was. She said that their schools have rats in it. The drinking fountain doesn't work. They'll close one school in Flint without notifying the public and then reorganize and send the kids to another school. She was basically saying that, you know, the school system sucks there. And here's this, they gave her the spotlight for 5 minutes, just like they did other people asking questions. But, I mean, really, when you really are at the mercy of government and you can't figure it out on your own and you're depending on those services, those are the types of Americans that need help from the government, not people who can, like Antonio Villaraigosa, who said L.A. school sucks and he sends his kid to private Catholic school. So, I mean, you got to look at people like that during this election cycle and say, are these the kind of people who are going to get help?
And the answer is no, they're not.
Well, the fact of the matter is Flint, Michigan is probably poor. I mean, look how many, that's where Michael Moore is from. He's done like 5 movies on the auto industry flight in that region. So, I mean, like, the fact of the matter is they don't have enough money coming in to fix all those buildings. So, now, Richard Nixon used to have a program where he earmarked so much federal money for each state so the state could fix their own problems. So that would be one solution to the Flint, Michigan public school system.
Yeah,
It
wouldn't really help, because the issue isn't money. It isn't how nice the school is. It's a spiritual and moral situation. I grew up on the east side of San Jose, and it wasn't the worst place in the world, but the point is, it'd be the equivalent of growing up in East L.A. But I was raised with a certain spiritual principles and fundamentals that guided me through. So I didn't do drugs ever. I didn't ever drink. I didn't ever smoke. I didn't ever get into crime or gangbang or any of the other things that were around me. And because I had a spiritual foundation. And so a lot of this stuff, you'll find they'll pump money and they'll pump all this kind of attention into these kind of schools, and the kids don't do any better. You'll find rich people, say famous people with their kids who have everything, and these kids are drug addicts, and they're washouts, and they have...
You know, you're right, and I can answer, you're right, because Lauren has a friend, the friend's mother's rich, she owns a coffee shop, and her fourth son dropped out of school to go to adult school because he didn't keep up with his grades. They have all the money in the world. She just married a doctor. They live in a four-story mansion, and it is a mansion by all standards.
You know, spiritual void cannot be filled with material things. So, I mean, it's nice, and yes, you know, if you have money, if you have a higher education, you can have a better life, but it doesn't make you a better person. And that's what the problem is. You find in the poor areas, they don't have a mom and a dad, and the spiritual foundation isn't strong. And then you add drugs and corruption, and things go downhill. But it still starts from a spiritual plane. And that's what we're trying to
fix. Dick Gregory made it out of the ghetto of Chicago. He had to fight for his life, but he made it. That was a famous writer from the late 60s.
And if you don't have a strong foundation, you may find yourself pulled, you know, and you may find yourself, you may be a church kid and you're running down the street, running for your life, and you have to get a gun and you have to defend yourself and, you know, and on and on. And suddenly you become a villain when that wasn't who your intention. So there's a whole bunch of things like that. The best I could say is with America and with our country is you have to start with yourself and get your spiritual center correct and work from that angle. And then, you know, by the grace of God, things will work out. If you don't have that, I think you're just going to wash out. And that's where
I know
we're
a lot
at.
Of people whose lives were turned around because of Christianity. My friend who grew up in the ghetto, her mom mother gave birth to her at age 12. She did drugs from, like, age 25 to 35. She stopped. She turned her life over to God, and now she attends church twice a week. But she started out on the wrong side of the tracks, but she crawled out of poverty with jobs and education. But she also had, like, a 7 to 10 year period where she used drugs.
It comes down to a very simple thing, and that is, it's the wonderful cross that Jesus died on. And people want to sanitize that, they're trying to make things cool, that God is good and full of blessings, and we focus on that. But people don't want to concentrate on the fact that we're sinners in need of salvation and that Jesus is Messiah. And that alone, that's what we need for salvation. And that's controversial. If I said that on open mic at the Oscars, they'd say I'm a wacko, you know, born-again fanatic. And I understand that. That's how it sounds. But the bottom line is that's what changed my life.
Well, even with the message of Christ, our country could do better at finding equivalent solutions. Even all these people like John Boehner, who professor a Christian, and Republican hardliners, you know, in the old days, even people like Newt Gingrich, who was a lot bigger, hard ASS, he worked with Clinton to create welfare reform. I mean, we were talking about politicians earlier. We have to come to solutions together, you know, and if it's on the basis of faith, fine. But you're right, the poor people in the ghettos are going to make it one way or the other. They'll find the strength. Because I've worked in two different ghetto areas in my life. So I've worked in public housing in Portsmouth, Virginia, and I had friends in South Central Los Angeles. So, but anyway, we should end the show because, as you say, you only have one day off a week, and it's in Minnesota, it'll be Monday in 8 minutes.
Right. And by the time I call my date, I've blown out, instead of half an hour, I've blown out an hour and a half, which basically kills the evening. So, yeah.
Well, tell your date you had a press conference with Bernie Sanders, and it just ended. With that, we'll end the show. Good night, John.
Good night, America.